We're going to get started. My name is Scott. I'm going to continue being one of those obnoxious speakers. I want everyone to stand up. I'm the calisthenics guy. We're going to be fighting like Rocky. You know, make your head go like this, do a few punches, okay? And here's where I want to start with. I want you to turn to the people around you, groups of three or four, have a little conversation with three parts. My name is blank. I work at blank. And one word and only one word that reminds you of your first day when you worked there. One word and only one word that reminds you of that day. Don't forget to trade business cards. This is like networking. This is like real social networking. Okay, 15 seconds. Okay, so 5, 4, 3, 2, action. All right, so my name is Scott Polrad. I work at Cheeseburger. We have some websites that we're trying to ruin the internet with, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But what I want to talk to you guys about is how we get new people on our team started up, because we've started to do some things that are kind of innovative, or we think are innovative. At least they're fun and they work. And I wanted to share that with you. So I want to start with a volunteer, kind of a volunteer. This fellow right here, Soma FM. Stand up. What's your name?
Cheng.
My name is Scott.
Cheng.
And tell me about either this job you have now or some other place, that word that was reminded you of like the first day you were there.
Okay, so.
You can just tell me.
All right. The word I used was bag of crap.
Bag of crap. Flaming or just like regular?
No, regular.
Not deluxe. Okay, so why was it a bag of crap?
Well, because they gave me a bag of, like, paraphernalia, like free giveaway swag that you might get at a conference, for example.
Yeah.
But I already worked there. They did, however, give me a pen that actually wrote, unlike the other pens in the supply closet.
Gotcha. So they were trying, you think, probably, like, engender, like, team spirit, and you were like, I don't care.
Yeah.
What did you care about?
What did I care about?
Like, what would have been, like, made you have team spirit on day one?
Probably having a computer that I had access to rather than one that was locked down I couldn't install the developer tools on.
There you go. Okay, so, perfect. Thank you, Cheng.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Okay, second volunteer. Anybody else? Anybody have a happy experience? Right here, I can't see your name on your badge.
Jessica.
Here, stand up.
I think exciting.
Exciting?
Because that was my own business.
Oh, well, yeah.
But I hire people on, and I don't think they have that same experience.
Oh, no. Okay, well, good. So maybe I can help you out with that. All right, well, how about a volunteer from the back of the room? How about the girl with the red hair? I'm going to put you on the spot. What was the question? So a word or two, you know, from like a job you had, where, like on your first day, like how you felt about it. What's your name? Stand up. I'm really putting you on the spot. You could be the shyest person in the world. I don't even know. That's a good point. With the red hair, probably not.
Zana?
Yeah. Okay. And so what would be like a word that describes like a job you had on the first day? Either way. Like your current job or the previous one or whatever.
Disastrous.
Yeah. What made it disastrous?
It's kind of going back to Cheng, actually, is that not only did we not have access to our computers, but some of my computer access wasn't even set up. For a while, I had to like sit around and call the help desk so that I could even get in, log in.
So you couldn't even do work on your first day because you couldn't log in. That would suck.
Pens or pencils.
No pens or pencils.
I did have a chair, and recently we've hired people that haven't had chairs. So.
That's good to know. If you would like a chair, do not go work there. All right, thank you very much. Okay, how about one more volunteer? We'll go to this side of the room. Anyone? Bueller? No volunteers. Okay, well, I won't pick any more other people. But so we've got one kind of positive experience, two not so great experiences. I bet there's a mix of experiences that people here have had. And I meant to go to this slide, but I forgot to get there. And it all boils sort of down to this. Work is like everything else. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. Is that what I wrote? I hope I got that right. And you know, there's a lot of, an example I can think about this, like who's read that book by Malcolm Gladwell, Blink, right? First impressions are powerful. They really, really stick. And I'm thinking of a personal example. I live in Seattle, and we have a lot of sushi in Seattle. We like that kind of stuff. And I went with some friends to the sushi restaurant. We got a tatami room. That's the room. You go in a room, and you sit at the table with your feet down. And who's seen that movie, The Big Night? Where they have this party. It's like epic, right? And so we just had one of those nights because there was 10 people, and we were trying to order. And if you try to order sushi for 10 people, it's impossible. So we told the waiter, we said, look, just start bringing food, and we'll tell you when to stop. And it was just one of those nights that worked. Everything flowed perfectly. And we could go to that restaurant again for the rest of our lives. They could have the worst service ever, the worst sushi ever. But we had such a positive experience on that first day that we think it is just fantastic, right? And so first impressions are really, really powerful. And the interesting thing about work is when you're starting a job, you think about like the first day of school, right? You kind of dress a little bit nicer. Maybe you're on your best behavior. You want to make a good impression. But the thing is with work, first impressions are a two-way street, right? Our company, we are making an impression on the person who's starting, just like they're making an impression on us, right? And some people who come to start at a company, they're super eager to work there. Some are still kind of checking you out, right? And so it's important to think about the impression that somebody's getting when they start. We've started to think about it. So let me tell you a little bit about Cheeseburger, my company. So by show of hands, just who's familiar with Cheeseburger, what we do? Almost everybody. So for the three of you that haven't heard about us, we do the corporate speak. We have humor and entertainment content on the internet. It's all user-submitted content, pictures of cats. Who's seen a cat floating around the internet with pictures of captioning? That's what we do, right? I sit there all day typing pictures of cats. I don't do that, I promise. But the point is we have all this humorous content. And we have five brands here. We've got Fail Blog, which is like pictures of videos of things that didn't quite go right. We have Know Your Meme, which is sort of Wikipedia for internet memes. Meme Base, which is peculiar. I Can't Has Cheeseburger, which is our namesake, which is all about lolcats. And The Daily What, which is sort of internet news, what's happening on the internet today. And so I've selected a few of my favorites, just especially for you. Has anybody seen me give a presentation before? No one? Perfect. So, because I've selected a few of these before. So this one I selected just for South by Southwest. We took this last night. Okay, and then this one, I started getting the Texas ones, right? Because I figure you have horses here. What I think is so funny about this is I'm not sure if the pony dog or the dog pony is like feels sorry for the little girl or is sick of being dragged around the yard. I'm just not sure which one. And then, okay, a little political. I might offend some people, but I thought this was appropriate. Oh, no, that's not it. It's this one. I love that. And then this last one's one of my favorites. My friend Adam Dorsey actually made this. He was the very first editor of I Can't Ask Cheeseburger that we had. And he made this a few years ago, and he nails it. It's just fantastic. And I got this. This is like they like cars here in Texas, and they like horses, and I just thought this one was perfect. I love that figure. It's so fantastic. So what we do is a little bit peculiar. In fact, this is a tweet from just the other day when I was in the office when I was typing something, and I was typing it correctly, and someone had to correct me for the incorrect way to type, to spell this word, because a lot of things that you see in our pictures are incorrect. And what that means is that, so Cheeseburger is a little bit of a peculiar place, and that has given us a gift of freedom, which is we can choose to do things differently because nobody really expects us to do things the ordinary way. Lots of times I like to say, it's only tangentially related, when you start a company, this is the sixth startup I've done, you think there's like 110% chance of becoming the next Facebook. Right? You think you're going to take over the world. And when you start a company based on pictures of cats, you give yourself a 50-50 chance. So you instantly start to think outside of the box because your back is against the wall and you don't have a lot of choices. And so we started asking ourselves, I know what makes a good impression like when I'm trying to meet you, right? But what makes a good impression when somebody comes to start at your company? Right? And is it that they can get a red stapler on their first day? Is it that they can meet nice people? Is it that they can find their desk or have a computer that works? So on and so forth. And the good news is there's answers to this question. We didn't have to figure it out on our own. And the first answer we found was this survey, Fog Creek. Is anybody familiar with Fog Creek? They did a survey. They've done it a few years now. The first came out, which is, what do developers want? I'm sure you can find surveys for whatever business you're in. Developers want, will take less pay for a company that's a better fit, which begs the question, well, what's a better fit? Well, they answered that question for us too. And it's right here. And we can see the kinds of things that are a better fit. Room for growth, a good team, a positive organization, learning and doing new things, control over your work, and so on and so forth. And then you get down to the bottom stuff here. It's like a good office and, you know, stock options and things like that. So things that recruiters try and encourage you to, like, come to work for your company, and then the things that people actually care about. And then there's actually another really, this next survey is really, really fascinating. I don't know if you can all read this from where you all are way in the back, but this is a survey that was done. Factors leading to extreme job satisfaction versus factors leading to extreme job dissatisfaction. Okay, and I'll just read it to you because I don't think you can all read the words. And I can't walk over there because I was told that I can't go by the speaker, so I'll just point. At the top, there's these things that are referred to as intrinsic motivators. And you can see they have high green bars, so there were 1,700 events that led to extreme job satisfaction. They were achievement, recognition, the work itself, responsibility, advancement, and growth. And then at the bottom, you have what they call hygiene factors, which are things that lead to extreme job dissatisfaction. Salary, supervisor relationships, subordinate relationships, relations with peers, policy and administration. You see that big red bar going that way? That's policy and administration. Next is supervision, work conditions, status, security, non-work life. Notice that salary is right there in the middle. It's neither here nor there. And here's the other really interesting thing. If you look at this, notice how most of the bars tend to either have a big green one or a big red one, but they don't tend to have both. So that leads sort of the first conclusion, which is job satisfaction is not the opposite of job dissatisfaction. Okay? You have to remove dissatisfiers, and you have to add satisfiers. And it's not the same thing. So that was the first thing we learned. And then the second thing that we learned is look at this stuff up at the top, achievement, recognition, the work itself, so on and so forth. Then look at the stuff down at the bottom, the really big ones, policy administration, work conditions, like having a chair at your desk, security, I don't know what that, I guess that's job security, so on and so forth. Well, that's the kind of stuff that happens on day one, right? What happens on day one? You get there, they show you your desk, you fill out your health insurance, if you're lucky enough to have health insurance, you fill out some other paperwork, you show them your social security number so you can get a W-9 filled out. It's all this stuff that causes people job dissatisfaction. And now I can't remember why I put this next slide in there. Oh, I do remember. Okay, so we said, how are we going to fix this? And we started a policy that we were working towards, which says, okay, we are going to have developers be productive on their first day. So we're going to have them do some of that stuff on the top on the first day, and we're going to save all that stuff on the bottom till later. Okay? And I wrote this blog post. The whole way this talk got started about a year ago is I wrote this blog post called We Don't Show Developers the Bathroom Until They Write Code. And, you know, I guess I'm getting out of sequence here. But so, and I took a lot of heat for that. They're like, that's cruel, right? Well, look, we have a bathroom. It's right here. Okay, that is actually our bathroom. You can see there's like four sinks, and out of the picture here, there's some stalls, and that's a shower in the back. And so we really showed developers the bathroom. But the point was, is we said, look, on your very first day, what we want you to do as a developer is write some code and put it in production so that every single new employee, new team member, can go home that day and show a friend or a family or a partner or a child or whatever, I did that today. I contributed today. I achieved, I had to learn new things, I grew, and all these kinds of things. And so why did we choose that? I guess to get in a little bit of a riff about this, which is for a developer, well, I'm sorry, I skipped a piece. Who's familiar with sort of the lean kind of stuff, right? So lean is all about eliminating waste. And one of the big things that lean talks about is waste is inventory, right? You make a widget, you put it on the shelf, and you haven't sold it yet because it's inventory. So you've expended effort, but you haven't gotten the, you know, you've invested, but you haven't gotten the return back yet. So you've just wasted that effort until you sell it. The same thing, code is the same way, the work that developers do. When you write that code and it sits there on the shelf in source control or on your desktop or wherever, until it gets in front of the customer's face, it's waste. It's not valuable. You're not getting any return from it. It's like money you have that isn't in the bank getting interest. And so the seminal moment, the seminal moment for a developer is when their code goes in front of customers. Now, we're lucky enough to work on the web, Cheeseburger is, where we can put software in front of customers every day. But if you work on, I don't know, Oracle, right, where they ship releases much less frequently than we do, you don't have that option. So we're in a little bit of a unique position that we can do this, but whatever business you're in, whether it's software development or marketing or whatever you do, I'm sure you can find a way to get a new team member to produce some value on the first day. So this is what we started to do. And I walked through this second slide. So the seminal moment for a developer is delivering code. And so let's go back to this thing for a second. On their first day, when they actually write some software, what are they doing? They're doing some of this stuff up at the top. They're having to grow. They're having to learn. They're drinking from the fire hose on the first day. They are feeling like they're on a great team that can actually make it so that they can ship code on the first day. They're getting to learn new stuff. They're generating excitement about their company's products. They're not doing any of this stuff down at the bottom that developers don't care about. And the same thing with this, right? On the first day, you're doing all this stuff up at the top, right? You're achieving something. And you're not doing any of this stuff up at the bottom, down at the bottom. And so it's worked really, really well for us. We've been getting really positive results out of this. And so let me now go into a little bit of detail about how we do it so that you can take it back to wherever you work so you can do it for yourself. Okay, so it's sort of the nitty-gritty, and it's five steps, basically. Five things you have to do. The first thing you have to do is you have to let them know. Let the person who's starting on your team know. We start from the recruiting process all the way through the first day talking about this. It's a major recruiting message for us. Because if you think about all those things that developers want and all those things that cause work satisfaction, it's something that makes people want to come work at Cheeseburger. And likewise, when they show up on that first day, they're, you know, mentally prepared to, like, I'm going to do this thing that I've never done before, right? So that's the very first thing we do. The second thing we do is we are prepared. So this was not easy. This took us a while. But there's a lot of things you have to do, at least for a software developer, to get them prepared. So I think it was Chang. You have to have a computer that works, right? You have to have it sitting there on your desk ready to go. You have to have a setup guide. We have a 17-point setup guide for how to get your computer set up. You have to have a chair. You know, you have to have all the stuff. We spent a bunch of time trying to figure out through all these things, and it was rocky at first when we had people, we'd bring them on. We had to learn as we go. So that's the next thing. You have to be prepared. You have to think that through a little bit. And it takes, by the way, preparation takes effort. See, when we were first bringing on new people, which probably happens at a lot of your companies, they show up on the first day and it's like, oh, that's right. Joe is starting today. We got to get that guy a computer, right? Or we got to find him a seat, so on and so forth. So we actually had to build a bunch of internal processes with our HR and administration people to like make that happen. And also, as we built them, they became seamless. So when a person was hired and the offer letter went out and it came back in, you know, question.
Like, what size was it when you were unprepared versus prepared, like, employee-wise?
Great question. We were unprepared until about developer, say, 7 or 8. And then it was sort of like between 7 and 10 and 12 that we really started to figure it out. Because we sort of evolved into it. We sort of started having these experiences where someone would show up and then we'd have to order a computer and it would take 2 weeks and we were like, we're wasting their time and so on and so forth. So we started to think about, this is lame. And so I'll talk about one guy, Eli. He was the first person that we successfully did this with. And that was, he was about the 7th developer that we had, I think. But you know, we had a few previous people like John, who we had hired right before him, that was just a flop, right? So that's how it took us a while. The point is, it took us a little while to evolve into it, and we had to invest some time throughout the company to make it happen. So it became seamless. And now if we hire a developer, I don't have to think about it. Nobody really has to think about it that much because we have a process for how it works. And it doesn't happen overnight. Okay. The third point. Oh, the third point is control the change. So I told you that we have them make a change to our website on the first day. Now, it sounds like you're a developer. If I hired you, would I just let you, like, do anything? No, We pick out what the person's going to do, and it's not about testing their coding chops on day one. It's about showing them the full life cycle, from how to get their machine set up, to get our software, to build it on their machine, to have code go from their seat to their fingertips, out through the inner tubes, the series of tubes, and appear in front of users. And so we'll pick a change that's very simple. Lots of times it's a bug fix. It's very low risk. You know, they're not going to bring our website down by changing the size of a font or the color of something or whatever. But we control it because it's not about making it hard on them to have this experience. It's actually about greasing the rails so it goes smoothly. So we had to spend some time on that too, because the first kinds of things that we chose with this fellow Eli, we were a little more complicated, and we've sort of refined that as we've gone forward. The next thing that we have done is, this is probably the most important thing actually. Okay, if you take anything away from this whole talk, it's point number four on this slide. Assign a mentor. Okay, so, gosh, if you started here at Cheeseburger and we said, fix this bug on the site, you wouldn't even know what to do, right? So we take a person. I'll say, look, Eli, you're starting today. James, you are going to sit with Eli at his desk all day. That is your job for today. You are responsible for getting him to ship code. That is not taking away from the project that you're working on. Like, it's not this extra thing. It's actually what we want you to work on. Because so many people have experiences. I've heard these stories, like, in fact, James, who I just mentioned, he started a place. The other developers were, like, actively hostile toward helping him out because they were under so much pressure to do their own work that they couldn't take the time to help him out. So he was, you know, like, in the dark looking for the light switch. So that's one really huge advantage, is that We make clear that you're the mentor for today. We make it a person who they're going to work with going forward, so that you're starting to build a relationship, a working relationship together, and learning on the first day your teammates and how you're going to work together. And we make it a shared responsibility. Pair programming is a big deal in the programming world these days, and that's essentially what it is getting two people together to do the same thing. Because when you think about it, we walk you through this whole process. We send you through the 17-step setup guide. You get your computer, and so on and so forth. On day two, your head is still spinning. You still don't know where the bathroom is, right? I mean, you still can't figure out anything, right? You're still trying to figure out where to park your car and all this stuff. So it's not like we can get you 100% up to speed in the first day, but we can get you through the full life cycle, so then everything thereafter is sort of trying to remember what you did before. And having a person who you went through that with is really valuable, because you can go back to them and say, hey, James, I got to this point. What do I do here? There's a question in the back. The question was, what number employee do we recommend starting pair programming? That's a great question, in the sense of pair programming has a lot of definitions. So we don't really do pair programming in the strict XP sort of sense at Cheeseburger, but we do it. For those of you who don't know, the strict XP sort of sense is there's two people who are assigned as buddies. They always program together. They sit at the same desk together. They schedule time, like, you know, 2 to 4 p.m. We are going to do this together every day or whatever. I don't know exactly the details. But we don't quite do it like that. It's much more ad hoc. Like, I'm working on the flux capacitor, and I'm like, hey, what's your name? Jim? Jeb. I'm like, Jeb, you know something about this flux capacitor because you worked on it before. Let's work on it together, right? And so it's much more ad hoc, but it's more for us a knowledge sharing type of thing versus the very dogmatic way that XP does it of assigning buddies. And it's people are shifting around all the time based on skill set. So the question was, when do I think the best time is? Well, I think as soon as you have two developers, that's a good time for them to start working together, because just from starting to build things like shared vision for the design of the code and, you know, conventions for how you're going to do things, it's also, in my point of view, the fastest way to transfer knowledge is to work on things together, as opposed to, you know, early when I was in my career, there was a developer, Jeff Sanderson, I think his name was, and he always liked to say, like, the code is the documentation. Just go read the code and you'll figure out how it works. But there's so much in the design of why it's that way that you can't really know. And when you're a small company, just two people or four people or seven or even 15, you know, there's this kind of anthropology, archaeology that happens in your software. Like, why did we do it this way? I was just talking to a guy last night from Plantier, which is down on the Bay Area. Anyone know Plantier? I'd never heard of Plantier before. But that's his job. He's like, his full-time job is to be the sort of archaeologist or anthropologist at this company, to answer for people why they made these decisions in the early days for why their software is the way it is today. because he's been there since the very beginning. So assigning a mentor is really, really important in terms of getting people on board. It provides the social experience, it provides a training experience, it provides a positive experience, it provides a touch base for in the future when they have questions. Now they have someone to go talk to. And if you're a big enough place where there are small teams, you know, assigning someone on their team starts to build that teamwork as well. So that's really, really key. And then the last thing is Kaizen, always trying to improve. And so one of the things I do is after the first week, I think actually after the first week, I send an email to that person and I sort of say, how was your first week? Give me some feedback. And this is how we've learned, you know, lots of things about how we can improve. And I'll just give you one simple little example. When you start at Cheeseburger, there's some software you have to install. You have to install a database and a development environment and things like that. And we had all that stuff on the web, and you had to download it and install it. And this one guy, Dan, he started, and the internet was kind of spotty that day. It was basically down. And so he was like, I actually didn't succeed at getting code out there the first day. I didn't get it out to the second day because I couldn't actually get the software downloaded on the first day. And so we were like, okay, well, how could we fix that? Well, we got all that software. We burned it to a thumb drive. And now when someone shows up, we sort of just, here's the onboarding thumb drive. It even has a little note, like one of those, not note, but sticker from one of those label makers that says onboarding. So we have everything you need on there, so just to make it, to smooth the way. And so we've had a number of those experiences, and we've learned along the way. So we've had the advantage of onboarding now about 20 developers, so we've had the chance to do it over and over again. If you don't have that opportunity, it's a little bit harder. It means if you go back to step two, be prepared, you have to do a little bit more work to think about, I'm only a company of three people, I'm hiring my fourth person, I haven't thought it through that much, I haven't had a chance to iterate on it as much, so I need to think about the prior experiences and engage and ask the people who've been through it, how could we make it better? So let's talk about some of the results this is getting. I mentioned Eli before. Eli worked for a big company that almost everybody here has heard of and probably shopped at prior to working at Cheeseburger. It took him, he was a developer there, and it took him 2 weeks to get a computer when he started. So I said, how was it at Cheeseburger? And he said, it was scary, but very good, is what Eli said. So that was pretty positive. Then we had JM. JM worked for a little company. He didn't have anything to say much about his last place, but he said, it was the most productive day ever. It felt great, is what he said when I asked him after a couple of weeks. And then Dan, who I mentioned earlier, Dan also was at a place, Dan and James worked at the same place that was a very hostile kind of, not hostile like harassment, but hostile like unpleasant place to work. And he simply said, this is my best day ever. I couldn't imagine anything going better. And he was when we hired Dan, he was very hesitant because he was so scarred from his prior employer. I talk a lot about like people need to go like to employment therapy lots of times when they work at, you know, certain types of companies because they come out with just wounds and scars and baggage and stuff like that. And we have to like treat them. And so I love this picture, best day ever. So in a nutshell, that's what we're doing at Cheeseburger. And we're having great results with it. And we've seen, you know, there's a few other companies that we've talked to out there who are doing it as well. But I hope this has been helpful to you to think a little bit about how you can start to bring folks on at wherever you work, or if it's your own company or so on and so forth, to make it better for everyone. So I'll happily take some questions. I got right here and right there and right there, and we'll answer those, and then I'll pick up a few more. What's your name?
Rachel.
Rachel. So Rachel asked two questions. The first was, do we do this in any other departments than just with our developers? And the second was, do we do it as sort of part of the recruiting process? Some places have trials and things like that. And let me give you answers to both of those. So for instance, our editors, I think on their first day, are curating content on our sites. I think probably our salespeople are on the first day out there with a more experienced person meeting potential clients. But I don't know about all the other, I don't know about all the departments. I'm just imagining how it works within Cheeseburger, and I would suspect a lot of the areas. The answer to your question about do we do this in the recruiting process, so our recruiting process has a number of attributes that we've tried to embrace in it. One of them is we try and get, so developers are all part of recruiting. And by the time we hire someone, they've met 6 or 7 developers, either through interviews or so on. They've interacted in one way or the other. And one piece of that is we do a sample coding project before people even come in for an interview. So they're getting a chance to actually do work as opposed to just talk about what they're doing. They have to actually do something real and show it to us as opposed to just whiteboard code. When we do in-person coding interviews, we try and do real things as well. So we don't go. I did talk to a guy at Web 2.0 Expo who actually has their interviewees change something on their website, and I was kind of blown away. I don't know if we're that comfortable yet, but he was like, he basically came up afterwards and was like, I can one up you, you know, and I was like, whoa. So, but that's kind of we try and democratize our recruiting process as much as possible, mainly under two rubrics. The first is, well, I guess it's the same thing. The first is, if you're the developers, you're going to have to work with this person, so you better find out if you like working with them, because you're going to sit next to them for 8 hours a day. And the second is, the developers are the best folks to figure out if they're good developers, right? And to keep that talent high, as opposed to having managers or HR or whatever do it. So we really try and push down that recruiting process. Okay, second, I'll get you fourth. You're third in line. Okay, we had over. Actually, you're after this woman here. So, what's your name?
Jason.
So Jason says he works at a company that has 13,000 employees and has 500 to 1,000 developers, is that what you said? So maybe it's a really big scale problem he has, and he wants to know if it can be done. And the answer is, I don't know. It can be tried. It depends a little bit on your product, right? So we have the gift of two things, which is a web-based product so we can ship every day, and a product that is not heart surgery. Like, we can break things, and it's not the end of the world, right? We don't deal with money. Right, we don't deal with people's personal information. We're not dealing with any privacy. We're not dealing with people's actual health. So we have some wind at our backs a little bit, but it could certainly be tried. And it isn't necessarily about shipping code. That works for us. It's about if I go back in these slides a bunch, it's about those values, right? What's going to make people feel like that was what happened on their first day, not that. Right? The stuff at the bottom. So even if you're a huge company, you can design onboarding experiences, I don't know what your company's like, where a person walks out at the end of the day saying, wow, I've achieved something today, or I feel like I've personally grown, right? And it might not be as extreme as putting something on in your software or on your website, I don't know what you do, but it's ultimately about creating those feelings at the top as opposed to, because if you look at these words even, the words at the top are closer to feelings than the words at the bottom, which are like corporate speak, right? Right? It's like the words at the top are these feelings, and the words at the bottom are like sadness, 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 right? And so it's all about that emotional feeling, because emotions are so powerful, right? And those feelings, those things at the top, it's just that, I can't remember the name of the guy, but he wrote the book Drive. Who was that? What's his name? Dan Pink, right. Yeah, I mean, that's just autonomy, mastery, and... was it Tommy? Whatever. Those, he had three things, right? It's just that book. I mean, that's all he wrote about, right? So that's what the emotions we're trying to create in people on their first day. And then, like the sushi restaurant, it's just a rocket that keeps them going through the next 4 to 6 weeks, which are murderous because they don't know anything, right? They're digging through the code, trying to figure stuff out, making heads or tails of why have we hacked all together all this stuff, you know? Why is there Lisp in our C# code? Why did you guys do that? That makes no sense, right? And so, but it's fuel that keeps them going through, as opposed to starting out on day one, why is there Lisp in your C# code? This place sucks. I don't want to work here. These guys don't know what they're doing. Right? So that's what we're trying to create. Okay, so we had back there, and then here, and then there. All right. So it was Melissa. Had two questions. One about a big part of is getting speed to competency. A big part of onboarding is speed to competency. And the second one was about retention. And let me ask a follow-up about your retention question. Is it an intention of the retention of the employee or retention of the knowledge? Either. I never have actually studied it, but I would hypothesize that it gets people up to speed quicker for this reason alone. If my job as a developer is to write code, commit it to source control, get it built, have it pass the tests, have it ship, I now know on the first day how to do all the parts of my job. And so there's no gaps, right? If I start on the first day just getting the code, and then a few days later I learn how to commit it into source control, and a few days later I figure out how to get it out there, there's opportunity for gaps to occur, right? And it creates this scenario, so to speak, where it's sort of like, look, here's what's going to happen. The first time we're going to show you. The second time you're going to kind of be on your own, but you can ask lots of questions. And the third time you're on your own. And so it creates a kind of a structure where the ramp up happens a lot faster. Now, when you talk about competency for our whole code base, I actually don't know if that helps there or not. But at least overall, I think because we get the whole life cycle of what your work of your job is, I think we do get speed. As far as retention goes, I think it's helped our retention in terms of people because we've only ever had one person leave our team so far in 4 years, which has been great. And if I can even put an asterisk next to that, he left our team to go back to a startup he was working on earlier that finally got funded. So he didn't leave because he hated it. He left because I would have left, right? So not cheeseburger, but I mean, if I was in his shoes, I would have done the same thing. So my sense is it helps retain people, in part because it helps find people who are excited about that kind of workplace, and also because it's a more positive experience. Was there a follow-up to that? No. Okay, so let me go over here. This woman down here was next. What's your name?
Margo.
Margo. Margo asks if we have experience doing this with remote teams, people that work from home, and the answer is yes. So our developer team, which is about 15 or 20 people, almost entirely work remotely out of their homes. We have, I think, four developers in Seattle, and then the rest are in New York, Pittsburgh, Indianapolis, Nashville, Cleveland, Billings, Montana, Vancouver, Washington, Portland, Oregon, and one guy in Poland. And so, but he's moving to Rochester, New York. So we have had experience doing this with remote teams. And so I'll digress into the remote team piece for a second. We do two things. The first is we bring them to Seattle for their first week, right? At first, we tried to onboard people remotely, and it was just disastrous. I remember the first guy we did that with. Because not only are you just at home alone, like there's no social connections. You're really on an island. So it's worth it for us to make the investment to just fly them out for a week. It builds a lot of social connection. It allows us to do this in person. It just makes the medicine go down smoother entirely. The other thing, while I'm mentioning it, with our remote people, about three times a year we bring all the remote people to Cheese HQ. We call it CheeseCon. And it's a week of, it's not all that different. You know, we have some kind of specially planned activities, but mainly it's to get people working face-to-face. Because there's something about working with someone in person, having lunch, dinner, hanging out with someone, that then when you go back and you're working with them over Skype or GoToMeeting or whatever it is, it just makes it easier because you know a little bit about them. You know what their mannerisms are, right? I can just remember one developer who, when they started and then started come working in the office a few times, I was like, oh, so this is a guy that if like anybody around him is talking, loses focus, right? And you know, so it's good for him to work at home, right? So you start to learn about folks and what they're like. So that's what we've done. Okay, so we're right back here, this gentleman. Carter. So the Carter's question was, who actually executes the process, who are they, and then would we be able to do it if they weren't in place? So just the way we've organized our developer team is basically four teams of four developers that work as like little pods. And so when a person comes in, they're put on a new team. We're basically, you know, hire a person into a team. So we give our teams sort of funny names. We have the Adventure Team, Derpakeen, the Hipsters, and the Bears are our four teams. And so, like, we're going to hire someone into the adventure team right now. So what will happen is the mentor that I talked about will be a person from the adventure team. We'll do that. One of the other developers on the adventure team has been through the experience themselves. So to answer your final question, could we do it if we didn't have other people on the team? Well, not really, right? Sort of, you know, the first singularity of onboarding is difficult because there's no one there to coach the person through, but once you're to two people, you should, in theory, be able to do it. So that's how we do it. We sort of try and push it down to the developers. Is it a follow-up?
Yeah.
Okay.
A quick follow-up. So, are the four people you have working in Seattle then the leads of each one of the pods?
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Your question is, it Jim?
John.
John. John's question was the four people we have in Seattle, the leads of each of our teams, and the answer is no. It's just the people who happened to, we hired out of Seattle. Tends to be. We've done mixes of all sorts of things where the person comes to Seattle, but still a remote person. They'll pair with them remotely, but they're coming to Seattle to see the office, to meet the other people, to meet me, things like that. Because I'm the most important person to meet, right? I'm just trying to say, to meet the other folks. So, but if you're going to have someone who's remote, you have to learn how to do that remote pairing type of stuff. We've experimented with a ton of things and figuring out how to do that. And it's still imperfect, but we've gotten okay at it. So right back here, this woman had a question, and then we'll come down to some of these here. Lindsay. I'm sorry? Cultural, yes. So Lindsay's question was sort of the cultural onboarding. How do we do that? We give them a bag of stuff. No, we don't. We actually don't. Actually, we kind of have to force that on people. That's a great question. We don't do a ton. One of the things I always tell people as I was when they first start, I was like, look, spend a few hours. And we have about 50 or 60 sites. Go through every one of them. Just spend some time doing it, right? And see what the stuff is. But the other side of the coin is most of the people we hire, they know us in advance, right? They're fans. So we have a little bit of a gift in that sense. But one of the things I was just talking to these folks up here about it before the session was, in the last year, we created a values document for the sort of values of our developer organization. And probably we have that sort of buried away. We don't trot it out all that often. But probably it's one of the things that we should get out on the first day and be like, this is what we're about. It's actually, you should probably get it out in the interview process, come to think of it, and say, like, do you match up here? In theory, our interview process should match those values. And now you're making me think I have all sorts of work to do. okay, so this gentleman had a question, and then we'll go right back there. Oh, okay. Where do we find developers? Oh, the $64,000 question. Well, the number one source of developers is referrals, right? If I could draw a map of our team, and it's like the 6 degrees of separation, a lot of the folks, right? We hired Stefan, who used to work with Jacob, and then Jacob knew Joey because they went to college together kind of thing. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of just at least some of the folks in Seattle around the Seattle startup community meeting folks. We've used Stack Overflow Careers a bunch. Stack Overflow is a great source of high caliber developers. Naturally, we've gotten a handful of people who've just applied. I can think, we've met some people at conferences. Like I'm thinking of one of our leads was a guy that just did a conference in Seattle. Someone on our team struck up a conversation with, and then a bunch of us met him. And a while later, we were looking for someone, and we said, hey, let's call that guy James. He was cool. Maybe he would be interested. So it's been very ad hoc. We just stopped things like Craigslist because the signal to noise was so bad. I think that depends a lot on the company. So, we're a relatively small company, and we try to do things we try to be pretty progressive, is what I'm trying to say. And a lot of folks who, the kind of person who can work at a big company and who can work at a startup is a different person. I would fail at a big company. I would hate it. And the climate does not suit my clothes. And it goes both ways. And so that's one piece of it. And Craigslist we found was just a lot of folks who just weren't a fit for us. So we kind of stayed away from the mass place and try to focus on more of the niches. It's the hardest thing, though. Oh, great question. I'm probably going to get myself in trouble for saying this. Do we hire entry-level developers? Sort of, kind of, not really. So this is one of my biases, which is I joke with people, like, if you want to come work at Cheeseburger, you have to bring your own management and oversight because we're not going to provide it for you. And so it's really hard with totally entry-level developers because they need a lot of guidance. And as a small company, we just didn't have the time, energy, resources, or quite honestly, patience to provide it. As we continue to grow, we're going to have to build those systems to start to do that. We did hire a guy. We've hired some people who are sort of maybe 2 or 3 years out of school, so they're on the more junior end. So they've got a little bit of work experience. We've sort of gone two routes. One is to say, well, look, let's have Microsoft and Amazon, because we're going to set up, let's have them train them, and then we'll take them. We found great success. Almost every one of our developers has been some person who's been working at a big company and hated it, right? They've, you know, for all the reasons that we've talked about here, and we've, 15 minutes? Okay, have hated it, and so we've rescued a lot of those people out of there. Like a guy came from Lexus. Oh, I'm not going to pick on companies, but I said that one. So LexisNexis. Anyone work at LexisNexis? No. Okay. But you know they're dealing with all sorts of personal information. He just was miserable. He wanted to hack on stuff all day, right? And he had to get seven layers of approval just to like do the new coolest thing. That's one of these things, right? Where was it? Number four, learn new technologies, right? That's what he wanted to do. So we're like the house for wayward developers, I guess. All right. So right back here. Yes, what's your name?
So, you talked
about buddy process mentoring and how do you foster that sense of starting? That's a great question. So, it was Carter? Brennan. Who's Carter then? Oh, there was Carter. Oh, you guys kind of are wearing the same color clothes. Let's look at that. Okay, so Brennan asked, how do we have continuous learning? How do we have that happen? The biggest way is force of will, which is just making developers do it. Like we assigned every developer a book in December and said, you have to read this and write a little report on it. It was this book on refactoring. And they were all like, oh, this is awful. Why do we got to do this? It was really only like, well, it was like a 400-page book, but like 350 pages or 250 pages were like code samples. But so we push a lot of it and we try to hire people that are curious. One of the things someone was talking to me about last night was, because I was saying this sort of same thing to them, I said, well, that's interesting that you're being prescriptive about what they're supposed to learn. Like, shouldn't you be more open field and say learn something? Because you're never going to learn what you don't know if you don't sort of let people go out and sort of hunt for stuff to learn. So we haven't been super formulaic about it. Like, you know, you hear about companies like Facebook that have like a four-month onboarding. Anybody from Facebook that can talk about that here? No Facebookers, okay. So we haven't been super formulaic about it other than at times pushing it on people and really trying to encourage it. The one other thing we do is when we finally were a profitable company and we made enough money, we made a policy which is had a few parts. One is every person gets to go to sort of one big conference a year, and big meeting, it's sort of out of town and it's expensive, like coming to South by Southwest. And if there are smaller things in your hometown where you don't have to travel, you know, sort of $200 or less, just ask and go. And if there's any, you know, training, resources, documentation that you want, like, ask for it. We don't skimp on that stuff. Because spending $50 on a book, you know, can be priceless. And it's a penny wise, pound foolish, right? And so we subscribe to some things like Pluralsight, which has a bunch of training videos that people love and things like that. So those are some of the things we've done. Question was, how long, it was Marcy, right?
Yeah.
How long do we delay getting them HR paperwork? And the answer is, it happens on their first day. Because like, if you're sitting waiting for Windows to install or waiting for SQL Server to install, there's 20 minutes there, and the HR person come over and say, like, can you fill out this W-9 form? I mean, there's downtime in that first day. It happens. And but it isn't like the focus of the day, right? And you know, maybe sometimes it drags on, but it starts to happen right away. And we're, like I've said many times, we're a small company. We don't have a ton of stuff. It's like, you fill out a few pages, you know, your W-9, your health insurance, whatever the other kind of stuff is. You get a key to the building if you're in our space, and that's kind of about it, really. We try to have a lot of the things like your email account, all that kind of stuff up, all that kind of stuff, having an email account and access to the right intranets and things like that. That's in the Be Prepared section. We had to figure out a system for getting that all done in advance. We basically made a checklist, and who does it, and so that it can just happen seamlessly when we hire someone. Yeah. Thank you.
And you've got a good pattern for getting people success on the first day. Is there something that we could send to people as our new blog post that kind of encapsulates the rest of this?
Dale's question was, is there sort of a blog post that encapsulates all of this? And the answer is, there isn't anything recently. I've been really busy working on a big project we're working on. If I go back here, I'll actually show it to you guys. I'll do a little boo, boo, boo. Where is it? Keep on going. Well, let's just go look at that for a second. This guy right here, Cheeseburger Sites, that one up at the top, we've been working on for a while. This is ability for, I have this problem once a week. Hey, you guys should make a site about, or do you guys have a site about, right? And it's always like, no, blah, blah, blah. We have a list of a million ideas. So we made this thing that anybody can go make a site on our platform. Or if you go to sites.cheeseburger.com, if you have an idea for, like here, I have a text message. Well, my phone's in my bag. Just yesterday, day before yesterday, my friend Fred, who is a chef, hey, do you have a website for like strange things that people have eaten? And I was like, no, but you can go make it, right? So it's there. So we've been working on that, and we're sort of working on the second and third generations of that right now. So I haven't been doing a lot of blogging lately, but it's a good idea. I should probably spend some time to write it down.
Yeah, please do. I have plenty of
Did anybody film this? Like no. Don't. Don't.
The bigger question is, now that you've got the first day really down, mm-hmm. how do you address the longer process? What's the? Is it downhill after the first day, or how do you make it great? 3 months in.
That's a fan. So the second question Dale asked was, how do you make it great 3 months in? How do you keep it going? It's something we've talked about. We haven't, you know, it's sort of a question like Brendan asked, the continuing education thing. How do you continue that structured education? One of the things we've started is that whole first week, we plot out, there's say 4 or 5 different sort of subject matters where we have someone sit down with the new person about our code and say, look, here's how the core of the flex capacitor engine works, right? And we have people walk through some of the core parts. And one of the things we just did actually this week was we did a competency survey across our developer team of all the different kinds of pieces of software we have. And we just simply asked, do you, on a scale of 1 to 4, where 1 is I know nothing about this and 4 is I have a deep understanding of how this software works. We just asked everybody and we made a chart. So we saw where people need training and where people don't, where we have single points of failure that only one developer had a deep understanding of the software and nobody else did. And so that gave us a little bit of a roadmap for how we're going to try and bring people up going forward. Right here.
So our company, I work at a Minecraft company as well. And pretty much I think the first half of your first day is HR talking to you about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How did you work with HR and not have them in the corner of your desk?
Oh, fantastic question. What's your name?
Sean.
Sean's question was, you work at Bag of Crap Company, and first half of first day is HR talking to you about stuff, and how did we like get this going? How do we like subvert HR? And the answer is, you don't have HR people. We were too small. We didn't have. I was the HR person, right? I mean, the answer was, at the time we had a woman who was our admin, office manager, HR person, dog catcher, dishwasher, everything, right? And so, and then there was, you know, kind of 2 or 3 managers in the company, and we were the HR. We've only actually, Cheeseburger just hired its first HR person, started February 2nd. So, and that was like a year too late. By now, it's like a real mess. Like, we, now that we have a professional, we're like, oh my goodness, we didn't even know what we were doing.
And did you have her
shift
code?
No. I don't know what we had her do. We should have had her like hire someone or something like that on her first day. So, hey. Just kidding. So we just didn't have that problem. We were lucky. How would I do it in a new world? I would start by saying, hey, could you do your stuff in the afternoon, maybe, or something like that. Or, yeah, you know, like don't say I don't want you to do your stuff, but could maybe we work out a deal here where I get to do some of my stuff and you get to do some of your stuff. Because the prior place I worked, that was a big startup, like we had the same thing. You had orientation, right? And like, you know, your whole first day we were in the conference room and they're talking to you about, I don't even know what. Yeah. And how your health insurance, just nonsense. I mean, not nonsense, but, you know, not really inspiring. Not really inspiring. All right, way there in the back. The question was, what's the average time from when they come in the door to when they're shipping code? And I'm going to say 6 hours. So you know, they start around 9 o'clock, and, you know, usually ship shortly after lunch. Because we tend to, folks, you know, we end up having sort of a bunch of people take them out to lunch that day, and typically it's kind of after lunch that it actually happens. It takes, just from say 9 to 11 or 12, just takes like getting your machine set up, right? Once you're that far along, you know, changing a CSS tag and committing and pushing, because we use a continuous deployment system, so when developers push code in, it runs the tests and it ships. Like, that's pretty much walking downhill at that point. So what's your name?
Jonah
asked about our continuous deployment and a little bit about how it works. Is it just full automation, like we ship straight to production, or do we split test everything? And the answer is both. It kind of depends on the situation of what we're doing. We don't always split test everything. but on we have set up in our code that we can if we want to. One of the things we've done is we've made rollbacks really inexpensive. It takes about 15 minutes to ship. It takes about 30 seconds to roll back. So we've made it, and we've desensitized. Like what you know, in earlier in my career, like having to roll back was bad, right? It was like really terrible. And so we've desensitized people from that to say, like, look, as soon as you just see a problem, just get it out of there, and we'll move on to the next thing, and we'll fix it. So that's how we've approached it. All right, way back there, Mike. Mike's question was, is there a reason we have the new team member install their own software versus pre-install? And the answer is, I don't know. We've never really thought about that. We could totally set it up like that. We could make it even faster. Thank you. Right over there, we got a couple of questions. It's true. We use a Microsoft stack, so it's Visual Studio and SQL Server and, you know, ASP.NET MVC. It's not that interesting, to be truthful. But it's a good idea. I don't know. We just haven't got there yet, I suppose. Yeah, it's actually, that's kind of, you know, for like, say, our production servers, we have like, you know, images that we just blast on there. I don't know why we don't do that for developer machines. Well, thank you. Right there. We're a Scrum shop, and we use Pivotal Tracker. That's how we do it, and it takes effort. I mean, I'll be honest, having remote developers is hard, and we did it because the developer market is hard and competitive in Seattle. You know, all of the companies, you know, Facebook, Google, Zynga, they're all opening developer offices in Seattle to poach folks away from Microsoft. And so it's just a competitive market. And so the first developer we hired was a guy out in New York. And we just sort of, once that was, it was a guy who was at Fog Creek, and they have a policy of not having remote developers, and he was leaving to go somewhere else. And so we think Fog Creek's the bee's knees, and we hired him. And then once that happened, sort of the cat was out of the bag, no pun intended. And then it just sort of went downhill from there. Cool. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for your time today. One last thing. I'm going to go to the very end here. Oh, wait. That's, I like that one. I got to cruise. I got to go. Here. If you, oh, no. Oh, no. Okay, hang on a second. Let's see if I can find a way to go to the very end. Nope. What I want you to do, you have to download the South by Southwest app, and you have to go to the schedule page for this talk, and you have to give it like the 5-star. If you thought it was 5-star, and if you thought it was terrible, give it a terrible. But you're all still here, and they're like those folks that left. So, oh my goodness. Shit. Okay, look, here's what we're going to do. We'll just go like this, and then I think if I go like that, it'll work. Yes, there we go. So I don't know, I don't have the app, but go in there, give it a 5-star, +++, give it the whole everything. There's where you can find me at scottporia.com. You can find cheeseburger at cheeseburger.com. You can find jobs at jobs.cheeseburger.com. There are 3 jobs we don't have up there right now that I'll just tell you about if they're of interest to you. We're looking for an experienced user experience designer. And we're looking for 2 developers who have experience with mobile, someone who has experience with iOS and someone who has experience with Android. And those are job postings that we don't have quite up yet, but it'll probably go up within the next week or so. So if you have interest in those, you could just track me down at scottporad.com or I'm just scott@cheeseburger.com and let me know about that if the listing isn't up there. So thank you very much. Be happy to hang around if there's more questions. Other than that, have a great rest of your trip here.